Okay, let me officially welcome everyone to Conversations with the Masters, where we bring you the most exceptional best-selling authors of our time. I'm your host, Mary Allen, author of The Power of Inner Choice, and I am so delighted to welcome all of you here today. Our guest today hails from a famous literary family that has also been marred with some suicide and mental health issues, which is why Oscar-nominated actress Mariel Hemingway, granddaughter of author Ernest Hemingway, has spent over 20 years discovering and living the healthiest lifestyle possible. Mariel is author of 3 best-selling books, including Finding My Balance, which I loved, and Mariel Hemingway's Healthy Living from the Inside Out, totally packed full of so many tips that, oh, love this book so much, and Mariel's Kitchen, which is packed full of amazing recipes and ingredients for really having the both a delicious and satisfying life. And her latest project is The Willing Way, and we're going to learn a lot more about that today. So, Mariel, welcome, welcome. We are so delighted to have you here today.
It's so much fun to be here. I've been looking forward to it, as you know, for our Twitter, our collective Twitter stream. But yeah,
I know exactly. It's been so fun to go back and forth about that and spread the word. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, my gosh, this is so great. And it's really fun, too, because as I've learned even more about you, it's so fun because we share so many of the same passions around health and yoga and inner peace and creating our home environment. So that makes it really extra fun for me. So thanks for that. It's like you're such a kindred spirit to me, and I love that. So before we jump into our main conversation around healthy living, I'd really love for you to take us back a little bit to the beginning before you debuted on the silver screen and give us some context for how your passion for healthy living and balance emerged. You know, what was it like for you to grow up in your family?
Well, I mean, I always kind of preface this to say I have an amazing, being a Hemingway is a wonderful honor. It's a great heritage to come from. And it also comes with special accoutrements, which are, a little bit of funky mind problems. And, there's mental illness in the family. There's been cancer. There's been heart disease. There's been diabetes. And all of that said, the reason why I talk about all of those things is because I think everybody has a story. I think everybody comes from something or, something to get over, all of that. And, growing up in my family, it's so interesting because people say, how did you deal with that? Well, when you don't know anything different, you're not dealing with anything. It's your life.
Exactly.
I was a little kid and my mother had cancer and I was her primary caregiver starting at 10 years old. And, I didn't know differently and I loved my family. They were a little crazy and there was a lot of, alcoholism and the whole thing, but they weren't bad people. Do you know what I mean? So it's been a journey and I'm afraid my introduction, sadly, I think it's almost 30 years now, but
right.
It's been a journey of discovering who I am. I've gotten angry about it. I've not taken responsibility until finally taking responsibility, moving on, forgiving, knowing that my parents, my grandfather, my heritage did the best they could with the tools they were given. And I figured out early on that it was really important to accumulate tools to equip you for life. And that, and for me, lifestyle and health and wellness and peace and, your home, all of these things go together. Lifestyle is a lifetime, and it's an everyday process of, like my first book, Finding My Balance, and I think that everybody kind of has to realize our journey is never over. You never reach an end. It's kind of why I like yoga, because yoga is never about, it's not a competitive sport. It's you never become the best at it. You just go deeper into a process. So it's a journey.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, and I, partly, bring that up is, and some people, may not realize, you had to deal with, your mom having cancer when you were really, really young, and you know some of the things that you've gone through. Some people may look at you as just the actress and not know kind of the behind the scenes story that, hey, you know, it wasn't just you know, this glamour lifestyle and everything was handed to you as silver spoon. In fact, all of this really motivated you to like dig deeper within yourself. And I really love that. I really love how you used your environment as like, hey, you know what? I'm not going to fall victim to DNA.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I was given a great package of DNA, and it's just like what I decided was quite a while ago. I decided I'm going to take the good things, and I'm just going to make my lifestyle kind of create it so that it can circumvent the holes that I may have fallen into. And I did. You know, I suffered from depression for a while, I was on my journey of health, but I've done everything. I've eaten every way. I've followed many, many gurus and leaders and teachers and this and that. Not that that's bad. In fact, I've received so much wonderful information from everyone that I've taken class with or followed or whatever, and only to come to realize that all that information that I've accumulated over the years, which is wonderful, it made me realize that I was my best teacher. I was my best healer. I was my best dietitian, nutritionist. I was my best trainer. And it took me a very long time to find the confidence in myself, having come from a family that was kind of bigger than life and under the spotlight and everybody thinks they know you. It made it a little bit more challenging to find that. But once I did find that confidence in myself, it's been such a beautiful sort of awakening to me, because I'm not, you know, it wasn't what it looked like. It wasn't that, you know, there was no struggle or...
Right, it was kind of easy, breezy lifestyle and, right. Celebrity, you've been in 30 films, I mean, starring in... Woody Allen's movie Manhattan. We had a guest over last night. He's like, "Oh yeah, I remember that movie." You know, and you're tall and gorgeous and slender. People, I think, often assume, especially when it comes to the eating, "Oh, well, it must be a cinch to eat well and maintain a fit body." So, tell us a little bit more about the real struggle. I know you do that so well in your book, Finding My Balance. I just love just the vulnerability and the rawness and just how real. But for people that haven't read your book, just, you know, invite us into going back to some of the struggle. And
I didn't want to ever say this for the longest time because it was embarrassing to me, but I guess I really suffered from an eating disorder of some kind because I was obsessed. Even though it was healthy, I was obsessed with food. Now, everybody in my family was. I grew up in a family that was more, you know, their association with food, that was everything. It was kind of the only place we felt love, you know, and that happens a lot. And I think it happens with people that overeat and or overindulge or binge or do whatever. It becomes this replacement, trying to fill a hole. And our family was very much like that. There was very little communication. So food filled this void. My mother was sent to Cordon Bleu in Paris because my father was brought up in Paris and he didn't want his wife not to cook, you know, not to be able to cook incredible French food. So there was my mother going to Cordon Bleu in Paris with Julia Child back in the
wow.
I know, right? In the 40s. I mean, it's just great. Or no, in the 50s. It's kind of crazy, but we became this family obsessed with this one thing that we could all relate to, and yet it made everyone in the family started either obsessive or addictive at some level because of it. I mean, I thought that I was really in control, and of course, an eating disorder is all about thinking that you're controlling something, and you really, you know, and as we get more spiritual and more understanding of ourselves, we realize we have very little control of anything. Mm-hmm. But, so I was deeply concerned about everything I put into my body. I've been macrobiotic. I've been vegan. I've been all raw. I've been, you know, I've been all fat, no fat. I've done it all. You know, I did
I remember reading that for a short time, all liquids during the day.
Oh, yeah. I've done things, and it was because, you know, because I was in a business that I assumed you were only as good as your last hit thing, and you were only as good as how skinny and how wonderful you looked. And, you know, I'm a tall, thin person, but I'm a big girl. You know, I'm not petite in any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, because you're 5'11", yeah.
I'm 5'11", I'm a big girl, and, actors tend to be small. So I didn't get a lot of roles, so I tried to make myself small. I'd walk into a room, I'd kind of hunch my shoulders. I tried to be smaller. You know, I was very insecure about it, and it made food more of an issue for me. And, of course, my sister Marlo, she had a major eating disorder. She was bulimic till she committed suicide. That was a big problem for her. So there's those issues that come up from, you know, whatever. And I don't blame anybody. It's just what, you know, our family seemed to be, that was the obsession. That became the addiction.
Right, exactly. And just, you know, part of what you had to go through to get to the other side. And I know, you know, part of it was one of your turning points around with Dr. Evans and, you know, adjusting your eating and so forth. And here's, I just so wanted to highlight this and would love to hear about this transition, because you said that it took about a year for your body to get used to kind of this new eating plan in order to really get into a healthy flow. So maybe tell us a little bit about that transition period for you.
Well, it was interesting because I think I'd gone from my liquid during the days to having and it was very scary for me because I gained some weight. I never ever gained weight before, really. I mean, I thought I did in my mind. You know, it was all an illusion because I was obsessed. But the truth is I actually gained weight because I started to have to eat fat, and I was eating protein, and I was, you know, I was eating a balanced diet, but my body was like, wait a second, you're probably going to starve me, so I'm going to store everything. And even though for somebody else it probably didn't look like a lot of weight, but for me, you know, it was so trying for me. I was so upset and so scared, and I felt so out of control. But what I found is, and I stuck to it, and it was hard for me. You know, I wanted to go back. I was like, why can't I just, you know, drink a can of coffee all day long and then have one meal? I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, what was wrong with that?
Why? But the truth is, when I stuck with it, I wasn't always eating masses. I was just eating like a normal person is supposed to eat, and I didn't know what normal was, and that was the problem. So it took me a long time. My metabolism had to adjust. My body had to learn to trust me that I wasn't messing with it, because I messed with my body so much, even though it was in the guise of being healthy. But, you know, I fasted. I did all these different things, and finally it was like I came to a middle ground. It's kind of when – it's also when the kind of all the spiritual window shopping ended, because I think food has a lot to do with our mind being still and quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the only thing, but it's certainly a very large thing. When you start to eat normally, regularly, your blood sugar levels aren't going up and down, your hormones aren't in flux all the time, you begin to get a calm. And when I started to feel, I mean, I guess the best way to describe it is trying to feel normal and balanced. I calmed down, and I realized that, you know, everything was okay. And actually how I was brought up as far as, you know, balanced food was really the best thing for me. And that's what made me write, you know, Healthy Living from the Inside Out, one of the reasons, was to share how, you know, really finding moderation, finding balance, looking into your own history and discovering what it takes to be your health healthiest. Because my health is not going to look like yours, Mary, or some of the other people listening, you know, because I'm unique to me, and we're all unique. We're all like snowflakes, and we all are so individual. So it's important to look at your heritage, look at your background, look at how you feel you best felt. It's a different society nowadays because, you know, kids are brought up on not real food, and that makes me really sad, and that's kind of one of the passions of The Willing Way, which we'll obviously get into later. But so it just took its time. It took time for me to understand, oh, wow, food is a big, powerful thing, which I knew, for my mind. That was the greatest kind of discovery for self-discovery, is this understanding that I could actually get rid of depression and, you know, mood swings and fluctuations in hormones based on what I ate. And it took time to understand that it was a bit difficult in the beginning because I didn't always know what to do. But then I started thinking of it as an adventure instead of thinking, oh, the drudgery of having to look at what I eat all the time. And I started to think, no, this is pretty cool. And I got to the simplicity of, like, pure, clean, unadulterated, unabused food and what that meant for my body. And it works brilliantly. And I'm happy to say that I really did overcome some serious bouts of depression through lifestyle choices, and that's why I like to share it.
I think it's so fabulous that you do too. I mean, absolutely. Well, and I know one of the other things that kind of inspired your Healthy Living from the Inside Out book is that one of your staff members was commenting, I guess, one time when you were on a movie set and commenting about how everybody on a movie set, I haven't been on a movie set, so I don't know this firsthand, but everybody is stressed out, and you were like one of the only, like the only person that was calm and centered and so forth. And they were asking you, it's, you know, how come you're like the only one, you know? How do you create balance and inner peace even on a movie set?
Yeah, well, I mean, a movie set is probably like anybody who is in a stressful job, whether it's like, I don't know, trading stocks. I don't know.
Especially right now, trading stocks, that would be in there.
I'm sure that's extremely stressful right now. But
any corporate environment these days, because
exactly,
there's been a lot of downsizing, I know, and most of my friends and colleagues in corporate environments are doing double time, and, you know, we're working harder in this economy, so pretty much almost all of us, unless you're working at a day spa, probably has some stress with it.
Exactly. I mean, I think that we all, you know, we're working harder for less, and that's stressful on us. And movie sets are just kind of the micro to the macro. They're very crazy. They don't need to be, but everybody is living on massive amounts of espresso shots and crazy coffee drinks. Because they're usually, you know, anywhere from 12-hour days is a short day, and 18-hour days is a long day, is a normal day, pretty much. On a you know, short-term film, not big films that, you know, are made for $16 million, but, it's, you know, that's weird. Anyway, but anyway.
So what were some of your secrets to, you know, having balance and peace on a movie set like that?
That's the thing. Once I began to eat properly, and, you know, I would have a green drink in the morning. I started drinking green tea, and I gave up coffee. I did my yoga. I did my breathing exercises. I do my Tibetan rites. And I do that early in the morning. And it doesn't mean, that sounds like it's hours of stuff. It's not. You know, it's prior to going to a set in the morning, that's maybe an hour and then 15 minutes to get ready and go to the set. So I was able to start my day, and also some silence, you know, some meditation, in a way, because I really think the beginning of the day is so critical to how we move into our day and how our day will turn out. And I also think the night before and programming your day is also critical, but I can talk about that later. But I really feel that those initial moments of your day, the thoughts that you think, whether you drink water, whether you sit down and breathe and take some time to be silent and kind of visualize your day the way that the way you would like it to go, or just visualize light coming into your day, you know, really kind of planning. It takes a little bit of organization, but the benefits are so huge because I never tired. You know, when I make films now, I don't tire, and I used to. When I was much dressing like the rest of the crew and all this stuff, and I would just think, oh, just get me through this day. And I found on, you know, any time I've been on the set in the last, you know, 10 years, I'm so energized, like I don't tire, and that's so extraordinary, because when I was younger, I was much more tired, I was much more, you know, I struggled, like I think all of us do, trying to find that right thing, and when you do, it's just so wonderful.
Absolutely, wow. Well, and you speak to, you know, I'm gonna hone in on the coffee, because I know there's some people that, you know, I mean, heck, I don't know what percentage of the population drinks coffee or caffeine or soda some way to get that boost. And I know you've certainly had your share of it in time, but there was a period when you decided to quit.
Yeah.
What might you say to somebody who, you know, it's like, what do you mean give up coffee or, you know, kind of break an addiction to something like sugar or something?
Well, here's the deal. For me, I'm an addictive personality. I know that about myself. When I drink coffee, I didn't just have a cup of coffee a day. I drink pots full of coffee or triple espressos, you know, three or four times a day, which is insanity, and it's not good for you. So I didn't know. I was an all-or-nothing kind of girl. Now, I know this about me, so I would never tell anybody to do what I do unless that's the kind of person you are. If you know you're addicted and that you can't have a cup of coffee, because coffee per se is not necessarily horrible for you if it's organic, it's clean. There's even certain coffees that are actually quite good for you. But if you can't be moderate with them, it's kind of like drinking wine for the resveratrol or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can drink a half a glass of wine a day and be completely satisfied, or if you know that you have alcoholic tendencies or you're just that addictive personality and you have to drink a whole bottle, that's not going to be good for you. So you're not getting the good benefits. So it's about knowing the kind of person you are and knowing that, you know, and also knowing, like, for me, I'm a cold turkey person. I stop things. And that's also iffy. You know, not everybody can do that. When you stop coffee, and I think I write about this in Finding My Balance, I stopped coffee once on a set of a television show, and I couldn't remember any of my lines. I had the worst headache. It was like I'd gone dumb. You know, I was comatose. I didn't know what to do. It was probably not the best choice to make when you're, you know, when you're on a set and they're like, look, they're...
and they're expecting you to be remembering all your lines and performing.
Remember your lines, especially being a lawyer and you have to remember, like, you know, 8 pages of dialogue a day. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is a bad idea. But I'm so determined that I got through the day. Anyway, so that's a choice. You can do things slowly. I have recommended to people that wanted to quit drinking coffee or drinking massive amounts of caffeine to wean themselves off with mate, which is a green tea that does have caffeine, but it's a different kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, a different kind of buzz, and it's actually not bad for you. So there's ways of doing it so that you don't get sick and crazy. And then when it comes to sugar, again, I'm addictive. I don't, you know, I'm the girl that when I was a kid, if I had a piece of, a slice of bread, I usually went back and the loaf was gone. I mean, I just was that kind of girl. I'm not that way anymore, by the way, but I haven't eaten things that are bad for me for so long that I don't even think about them anymore. And I probably could be moderate, but I don't care about certain foods anyway, because if I don't think they're good for me, I'm not interested really. But
that's totally my philosophy too.
Yeah, I just figure, like, is it that good for me? Like, why waste my time?
Well, and I'm always thinking, why waste the calories? I'm a foodie like you. It's like, if I'm going to, you know, waste a calorie, I want it to be healthy, nutritious, and taste really, really good. So,
and I absolutely agree. And I think everything's out there for our enjoyment. My issue is, like, if you want to eat ice cream, eat the best ice cream that's made out of cream, you know, cream, milk, and sugar instead of 27 ingredients that you can't pronounce. You know,
right,
like,
with
really
preservatives.
Do things good, do them the right way. Do them, you know, and my philosophy is the same, you know. And yeah, why waste calories on something that you're not going to be happy with?
Exactly, exactly. Well, and you also have a really good, I know this is one of the four essential pillars to healthy living is food, so I'm glad we're spending some time on this because I think literally there's probably not a person listening in that hasn't either struggled with food in the past or is in the middle of struggling with it and, you know, still trying to find that perfect balance for them. So hopefully, you know, they'll get some good tips from what we're talking about here. But one of the things that you talk about too is about, you know, people do eat for comfort, and you had some great suggestions about, you know how to know if you're eating for comfort or real hunger and kind of what to do in those moments when it's like I need a cookie or I need something.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't remember what my suggestions in the book were, but I'll probably say them. I mean, I know with hunger, probably 80% of the time you're thirsty. So always grab a glass of water when you think you're hungry. If food is an issue, you know, if you're that kind of person, 90% of the time we're usually dehydrated. So drinking water is such a key thing. And drinking good water and drinking out of glass if you can. And then making different choices. My feeling is if you want to change the way you eat, start with your breakfast. Because, like, my boyfriend's always like, change everything. I'll tie you to a tree and I won't feed you for today. I'm like, dude, that doesn't work for most people.
Right. It's like, oh, yeah, like, instantly transform. It's like, no, and that, I think this is a good point. It's really start with something, and I think breakfast is one of the best places to start.
It is. It starts your day. Again, we go back to the beginning. And it's funny, you know, my grandfather, Ernest Hemingway, was a big believer in the morning. Now, granted, he's really like to drink and all that stuff, but morning was such an important time. It's such a peaceful time. And if you're at all spiritual, you know that there's a sense of peace in the morning that happens at no other time in the day. So using those critical moments, those minutes, those hours in the morning to really make good choices informs what happens in the rest of your day. So, you know, eating a different breakfast is a huge shift to your consciousness and to your body and to your mind. Because what happens is, and I've noticed in recommending that, I never tell anybody what to do, but just recommending it.
That's a great way to do it.
Yeah. Is that, you know, at 10 o'clock when you're a little bit hungry, you make a different choice because you actually feel better. So you go, well, you know what? I actually feel different because I had a smoothie that was made with organic ingredients and it was not full of sugar. It was really good for me. And I feel kind of better. So I'm going to make a different choice. I'm going to have a handful of nuts. And then at lunch you go, oh, I'm still feeling pretty good and I haven't dipped horribly. Maybe I'm going to make a different choice at lunch. What happens is you start to make different choices because you can tell that you feel better. And the only way people change is if they have an actual, you know, tangible experience that they can say, I felt differently. I feel better when I eat better. And starting your day that way is great because when you break a fast, your body's really more open and you'll be able to tell the feelings that you get from good food and the feelings you will get from bad food because you've been fasting all night.
So true, so true. And just actually in the last couple of weeks, we recently moved and there was about a week when I didn't do my normal vegetable smoothies for breakfast, and I was feeling sluggish and tired and a little bit, even a little bit more angst. I'm like, oh, it's like I really got the contrast because I've had so many, you know, I eat vegetable smoothies almost every day that I wasn't even noticing that there could be a problem, you know?
Yeah. It's nice to get to a place like that where, and it's for everybody, when you start to really pay attention in that kind of way, and especially for breakfast, such a good place, is that you get excited that your body knows what's right for it. You're like, damn, I know what's right for me. See, I was always the big person that thought every doctor, every nutritionist, everybody, every guru, every this for that and that person knew what was right for me more than me. And it was those kind of little small tangible experiences like breakfast that taught me, wait a
love that. I love that just we keep coming back to ourselves as that guiding compass. So important. Well, so food is one of the kind of four essential pillars to healthy living. So what are the other three?
Well, food, home, and you talked about that. Home is such a home, exercise, and silence. But home is one of the first things, and people sort of, I wrote that book because I was so yearning to find something that was about everything. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just about your food. It's not just about the way you exercise or if you go to the gym. It's not about just yoga. It's not about how you design your house in feng shui. It's not just about meditation. It's about all these things. These are all lifestyle choices. That's why I put them together. So home, I think, is such a critical thing. We love our home. We spend tons of time in our home. We sleep in our home. We raise our children in our home. We have friends over in our home. Our home is a place that expresses outwardly our inner life. I really feel that our home, and it doesn't mean that you go out and you have, a great designer come in and change your home. I've always decorated my home kind of haphazardly, and, it's my home, and it expresses my love of where I've been and all that stuff. And I think that's really important for people to understand, is that the color of your home, the smell of your home, the way your kitchen is laid out, the way you feel in your bedroom, is it peaceful? Is it a place for making love and for finding, for getting rest, true rest?
Mm-hmm.
These are the kinds of things you have to ask yourself in each room of your home. Like, is my kitchen a place of festivity and sharing and service? Because to me, that's what, the kitchen and food is such a place of service, that I think home is such an important aspect of our good health. I'm even a part of this company called Cambria, and they make quartz countertops that are Green Guard certified, and there's no off-gassing, and they don't rake a forest in order to mine the quartz. And those kinds of choices, you don't have to make that choice, but that those kinds of choices make for a healthy home.
Yes.
And I that's when becoming an environmentalist becomes about your well-being. It's not like, oh, I'm going to go save the rainforest, which is a really nice thing to do. But when you feel as though it's touching your own personal life, then you're like, oh, this makes sense. Environmentalism is part of my inner environment. So
yes,
I like to think of it that way. Yeah.
Well, you share so many amazing tips in your book, Healthy Living. One of the great ones around your balanced environment, you talk about slowing down your home. Talk a little bit about that. What does that mean, to slow down your home?
Yeah, slowing down in every way. Bobby, my partner, boyfriend, whatever, we have a technology-free day every week. We really believe in slowing down, and it's hard because we're launching a business. We're trying to do all these things. We're on the phone a lot. We're on, we're on our computers just like everybody else, and we're trying to tweet and do Facebook and do all these things to create a movement, a social media movement. But at some point, we have to slow down. So again, gets back to the morning. What do you do in the morning? Are you rushing out of your house, getting in the car, grabbing a cup of coffee and a donut, and moving at speeds too fast so that you can't really, you're not living your life? It takes you out of the present moment. It doesn't mean that we don't move fast. But it does mean that we have to be aware of how fast we're moving so that we can remind ourselves that being present, and it doesn't mean that you get less done. That's what's really interesting about slowing down. Slowing down makes you more aware. And I love your tweets that you say, inhale and inhale for three breaths or whatever, four breaths, and exhale for four breaths.
Inhale for a count of four, hold, inhale, hold for a count of four, exhale, yes. Yeah. I remind people to breathe on Twitter.
And that's important, and people don't realize that's a tool for slowing down. And I remind people, shut your computer for 2 minutes. Close your eyes. You don't have to call it meditation, but just close your eyes, breathe, pay attention. That slowing down gives you time. Silence gives you time in your life. Believe it or not, when you take time, and it doesn't have to be, you know, an hour of meditation, but 2 to 5 minutes, you know, and maybe you can build towards 20 minutes, actually expands time in your life. You find yourself being less stressed and rushing your kids to ballet class or whatever you have to do. You know, we all have crazy lives, and it doesn't make that go away, but it makes you able to deal with it in a more conscious way. And when you're more conscious, things are just easier. And slowness, and I mean like the slow food movement, slowness is so healing. You know, and the slow food movement, I think, is a really important movement because, you know, fast food is killing, especially this nation. It really is killing us, not only because of the chemicals, but because of the speed with which food comes out, and there's no humanity and there's no love, you know, surrounding that food. It's just, it's not even food. It's,
right.
And that speed, that getting things fast is killing us.
Right. And, you know, and I love that you talk about that both in context of your home, but also with food, that, you know, just, you know, that food can actively help you slow down and find your calm. You know, when we stop and prepare our food, we actually can turn that preparing food almost into a meditation.
Absolutely. Everything can become a meditation. That's one of the things I talk about just in general, is that when you slow down and you become more mindful, which is sort of a Buddhist term, but whatever it is, you become more aware and more conscious, you start to realize that you can have what I call a yogic attitude in everything you do. You don't even have to do yoga. But you can, you know, park your car far away from the market and have a mindful walk there. Just be conscious of what you see, what you smell, how you feel. And everything becomes more simple and more important, and you stay present. Because in the present moment, there's really no problem. There's only problems when you're worried about what's going to happen in the future or you're stressing about what already happened in the past. But in the present moment, there's only solutions. There's only action to be taken. And you do that, you take that action in order to deal with stuff. I'm not saying that problems don't exist, but there's no, you know, it's just moving forward to create space to accomplish what you need to get accomplished because something came up. And instead of seeing life as in a problematic way, if we're present, we're just dealing with the present moment. Does that make sense?
You're singing my tune here. Absolutely. Well, and one of the things you say in the book, and let's talk about probably my almost favorite part of your four pillars, which is silence, which is really akin to inner peace. And you say that the ability to access the peace within is one of the most valuable skills you can develop. And maybe I love how you described even just how you sort of initially stumbled into that kind of spacious silence within yourself. Maybe just talk a little bit about, you know, how you've grown that for you, and, you know, for some of the people that are still like, you know, how do you create inner stillness inside and, you know, are uncomfortable and stopping and just being with themselves. Tell us about your kind of, I guess, migration into silence.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that I was always very attracted to, you know, silence in its association with nature. Because when I was a kid, because, you know, the house is a little bit crazy sometimes, I spent a lot of time outdoors, and I would go and I would hike mountains by myself, listening to my breath, not aware that I'm, you know, I wasn't such a spiritually, you know, aware being, but I was very conscious of, like, the feel of my body, my breath, whether it was cold, whether it was hot, and doing it in stillness. That was the first sort of, that was kind of a moving meditation that led me to later on in my life, I started doing yoga. initially it was just as a competition. Like somebody said, you can't do yoga. This is really hard. I was like, whatever. I'm an athlete.
I'll take it on right now.
Yeah, exactly. So I went into a yoga class and got my behind kicked, so to speak. I was like, wow, that was hard. But what I started to find is that after the end of, you know, I learned through my physical body. So at the end of this kind of moving meditation, and I would be lying in Shavasana, which is, you know, lying on my back with my arms, you know, my arms to my side and just totally relaxed, my eyes closed, and I started to feel differently. I started to feel this wave of peace going through my body that I never felt before. And yet I would experience after, you know, stressing my body physically when I was a kid. So I started to associate that peace was such an important part of my life. And it really, it shifted me dramatically. And I meditate every day, not tons, but enough to give myself
peace. How much do you meditate?
Anywhere from 10 minutes to 45 minutes twice a day. But just depending on how much time I have. And, you know, I love it. So if I sit there for 45 minutes to an hour or something, it's because I'm just enjoying myself. But if I don't have time, I know that I will always make time for that 10 minutes if that's all I have twice a day. Because it's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and because not only is it important to me, I see it make a difference in my life. When I don't do it, and I don't do it, things are just a little askew. They're just a little off. I'm not quite as present in my body. I'm a little off balance. So, and it's like my first book again. I'm always trying to find my balance. And it's going to be that same journey every single day of my life. And I accept that, and I actually think of it as my pleasure and my adventure.
Right. Well, and it seems like early on, you know, as those of us that have jumped into meditation or just the practice of mindfulness, sometimes in the beginning, it takes a little while to kind of build up that connection to inner peace within us. But maybe your experience has also been that, you know, now that you've been doing this for, you know, many, many years, that it's much easier to drop in and connect. You don't necessarily have to be on your meditation cushion to grab some silence, right? You can do it other places.
Oh my gosh, I do it on planes. I do it on the way to planes. I mean, not when I'm driving. I do it wherever I can. I take, you know, those moments where you're in a grocery line and you're.
I do it there too. I was just thinking the same thing.
I'm like, and you're annoyed, and you're like, this is the longest line. I chose the wrong line. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? Whatever. And then I suddenly go, oh, wait, I have something to do.
And right, I'll get present and mindful.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't have to close my eyes. I just start to become aware of my breath and aware of everything around me. And it's so awesome to realize that you have the power to take yourself out of annoyance and being a part of this crazy, silly world that really isn't real, and just go, wait a second, I'm right here. There's a lot going on. I can find my inner peace no matter where I am. So if you're in a movie line and you're waiting, take some time to just be aware and breathe. And I love that you do that because, like, so many people just look at me and, like, cross-eyed, like, what?
All right.
Like,
no, I was thinking the exact thing as you mentioned that. It's one of my favorite, any time that there is a potential to be stressed, I think it's an invitation to drop an inner peace. So I just love that you're someone out there really doing it and applying it and getting to enjoy the results of that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So what do you have to say to somebody who feels awkward in being in the company of their own thoughts and silence? I know. Even I've got some clients that are, you know, go all the time and have a hard time being in the quiet, have to have the TV on, don't really want to be in silence. Any tips that you have for those kind of people?
Well, first of all, give yourself permission to be quiet, and also forgive yourself for needing distraction. Because sometimes we beat ourselves up because we think we can't do something. The truth is you can. It's like no big deal. What I always say to people is, in silence, nothing's going to happen to you. I think people worry that things are going to come up that are very uncomfortable. And things sometimes do come up, like memories might come up, but memories can't hurt you because they're memories. And the truth is, if you can commit to 2 minutes, that's enough. And give yourself permission that 2 minutes of you know, in your morning or night, whatever it is good enough. And then maybe if you can get through 2 minutes, you can get through 3, 4, 5, you know, whatever. You keep adding on because you start to understand that it's helping you. And also the other thing is, so many people say my mind never stops. Well, nobody's mind really ever stops. You know, Himalayas and you're, you know, somebody, Bobby G or somebody great, you know, awesome like that. But we're not those people, and I think it's okay. I think you just have to go, this thought is, you know, not going to go away, and if it's super important, I'm sure to remember it in 15 minutes. You know, I mean, the thing is, we just give yourself a break and all of a sudden let thoughts come and let them go. Don't hold on to them. If that can be your practice, it's just, I'm going to let this go, I'll get back to it later. You know, and be easy with ourselves. I think we're so hard on ourselves because we want to be experts at everything we do that the people that are like go, go, go all the time, they're probably really good at what they do. And then for them, they feel as though they're not good at something. But it's not about being good at something. It's just about being present and aware and just being with yourself.
Yeah.
And that requires nothing but you.
Right. So beautifully said. Ah, love that. Well, and so just to speak a little bit to mind chatter and thought, I know that's another big topic that you speak to about just thoughts and mind and inner dialogue. I'm curious, you know, what your own inner dialogue is like and how you dance with it, you know, if you even still have kind of those times when the mind runs crazy. What do you do yourself?
Well, it's kind of like the experience in the grocery store. I just go, wait a second, what am I doing? You know, so I'll find myself getting all over-amped, and Bobby and I are starting this business, and I overthink things, and I find that I'm waking up in the night, and I go, and I stop it all, and I'll just get still and listen to my breath. It all comes down to breathing. You know, if you breathe, you start to get in your body again. Because when your mind starts to go, your mind wants to control everything. Because that's how we're designed to do that. And we think our mind's extremely, and our mind is powerful and very interesting, but our mind is not always our friend. Because our mind is programmed with many thoughts that actually are contrary to us being our best self. And that they're not yours. It's not really our thoughts. They're like thoughts that came from your mom or your dad or a teacher or something else. They're usually not you. It's like the not self, you know, the mind behind the mind that sort of finds fault with you. I often say to people, it's like if you had the person in the back of your mind over for dinner, that one that is critical of you all the time, you would be like, wow, honey, we're never having that person over again. Pain in the butt, very rude, and very mean. But we put up with that voice all the time, and it's becoming aware of that voice that you can actually stop that chatter. Because it's just chatter. It's not really you. I find that to be the not self, you know?
Right, right. And it's that shift from being kind of in the chatter to the observing the chatter to, you know, taking
exactly.
that step back. And that's really probably, you know, it's the one thing that you come back to again and again as far as the real secret to turning healthy living into an effortless lifestyle. I mean, it really, it's all about dropping back into that awareness, that observation, so that we can then make good choices.
Absolutely. And that's what it got. Yeah, I mean, again, you're right. It's all about take a deep breath before you make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I recommend in the book, like take a deep breath before you do anything as a practice. You know, for 5 minutes, I'm going to inhale and exhale before I do any new anything. And really, it makes you so present. It's like, wow, what am I doing? You see how much we do unconscious things. And it doesn't mean that I'm not unconscious. I'm unconscious all the time, and Bobby points it out to me.
Isn't it great we have significant others that can do that for us?
Good. But the lucky thing is I get to do it to him, too.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, tell us a little bit about what's, you know, the willing way. And I finally got why there's not a space between willing and way, because the willing way is all one word. So sorry about our little typo on that. But tell us what this project's about. And
It's incredible. Well, Bobby Williams, my partner, his last name is Williams, my last name is Hemingway. Together, it's the willing way. He has the will. I have the way. Of course, I have the way. Even though I'm second, I'm really first.
Exactly.
And he always says, yeah, but if I impose my will on you, then it always goes my way. But that's
right, or then there is no way.
There's no way. Yeah, right. So we created, we are launching a company that is about health and wellness and connecting with yourself through nature, through food, through home, through silence, through seeing sunrises and sunsets, simple things that we can do every day to create more vitality, more awareness, to reverse the aging process. Through conscious thought, through the water you drink, the food you eat, and the physical activity that you do in connection with nature. It's not dissimilar to my own theories, but it comes from a male-female perspective, because so much of us are in relationship, and whether it's, you know, a male-female relationship, a male-male, female-female, whatever it is, relationships and relationships with coworkers, family members. Relationship is really what teaches us everything, our relationship to each other, our relationship to food. So that male-female dynamic, that yin-yang of the two of us together is really an incredible exploration and makes me see things through different eyes now. And I really like that we both, whereas, you know, healthy living from the inside out with home, food, exercise, and silence and bringing that lifestyle together, with Bobby, it's home, food, exercise, and silence, nature, male-female dynamic, and creating the life that is right for you, the individual, whether you're male or female. And it's just powerful. And so we have our biggest thing is we say to ourselves, how would nature do it? So it keeps it simple. We want to give people ideas and know about food and just have information. We're not telling anybody what to do. And also, we want to connect with some of the science that's out there. In fact, we're kind of connected to a couple of different machines. I know that sounds kind of contrary to nature, but they're machines that sort of mimic the heightened natural places so that we can be at our optimum. We are the spokespeople for a company called CBAC, and it's a cyclic variations adaptive conditioning, which is about, you get pressurized at altitude and it goes as high as 22,000 feet, but you don't start out that way, and it goes up and down, which actually exercises all our cells, all our muscles, all of our organs, and builds stem cells. But it's a fitness machine, and it enhances your fitness. It is amazing, and it's also like, oddly, because of that mimicking of high altitude conditioning, it's you're in a pod that looks like a Jetson pod, but it's like being in a very strong meditative state if you choose to be silent in there and really kind of tune into what's happening to your body. So that's one powerful sort of scientific thing that we've logged on to. We have Dr. Perricone, who is going to verify all the science that we bring to the table, and also all the nature things, and, you know, eating organic food and not buying into GMO foods and never buying them, so that we can stop this crazy thing that's happening in our country, because GMO foods are really, you know, foods without information, and they are
what,
not
what,
good.
What are GMO? Is that what? What is that?
GMO, genetically modified organisms.
Oh, GMO, yes, okay.
Yeah, and they are really bad. So, for instance, if you have a GMO apple, you have an apple that really has no no different than eating, you know, something that's not good for you, because it's food without information. And when I say information, like, seeds have information, and the seeds of these plants have no information, which means they actually have no nutritive value. And they're very detrimental to our health, because our bodies are very sensitive. And when like we were talking about in the beginning, our sensitivity to understanding our food as we get into it, if that becomes your passion like it is mine and Bobby's, you start to understand that, wow, I make this choice in the morning, I feel differently, wow. You know, GMOs just, they don't even allow you to have any reaction, because it's empty food.
One of the great things to leave off all plates, that's for sure.
This is
exciting. And so the website for them to go to is
thewillingway.com, WILLINGWAY.com. We're just now really launching. We're making it a social media campaign. We're going to do, 2-minute shows, if you want to call them shows, but information, not dissimilar to what you're doing. And just sharing, because we believe we're all connected and we all need to get it out there. We all need to work together to get this message of simplicity, nature, health, wellness, and being happy out into the world, and that it's doable by everyone.
It really is. And what I love about everything that you do is the tips really are simple. You know, little exercises, little tips that you can try immediately. Just when you think, oh, I can't make a change, I can't create any new fresh momentum, really, I mean, if you even listen to half of, or even a tiny percentage of what is in your books, and I imagine what you're going to be sharing on The Willing Way, just imagine what a huge, huge difference is going to have. And hopefully everyone will want to try everything.
Oh, I'm so excited. Well, thank you. This is so much fun. I'm excited. We'll keep you updated, because we're going to actually write a book called The Willing Way.
Awesome.
And that'll be awesome. We'll have to talk again.
Well, awesome. Well, you are an extraordinary example of somebody who really walks the talk and is aging gracefully. By the way, you've got a birthday coming up this month, yes?
Oh, indeed I do. 20 days before I'm 50. But you know what's so weird? It's like, I know 50 sounds so crazily old, but I feel so much better than I did even at 25. So I'm loving my life. I'm making really good choices. At least I hope so. And life is good. And you're also an extraordinary example. So thank you. I'm honored that you would have me on today.
Well, thank you so much, Marielle. And thank you for all of our listeners for being a part of today's call. Please go to thewillingway.com and take advantage of these amazing resources. And if you don't already have Marielle's 3 books on your bookshelves, I just can't even recommend them highly enough. I'm going to go back through and try recipes and the whole nine yards. So any last tip that you want to leave us with, Marielle?
Go out, have fun, laugh a lot.
Sounds good. That will end this note on a high joy note. And thank you, everyone. Thank you, Marielle. And we'll see you on the next call.
You got it. Bye.
Bye now.